Good morning, and welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hi, and welcome to An Hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and that is exactly what we're going to be talking about today, mind power. Now, we're going to be focusing more on children, but I want you to know that this material that we're going to be talking about today relates to anybody of any age, and it is so important that we dispel the myths. Enriching the Brain is the name of the book we're going to be discovering, how to maximize every learner's potential. Eric Jensen is my guest. Eric, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Now, Eric, where are you located?
Home is in San Diego, California.
Okay, so you're right on the West Coast then. Eric, you are internationally known for your education, attitudes, and for techniques that you have developed. You have taken neuroscience that has been very important to you, and you have translated it into practical classroom applications. You have been a teacher, so you've walked the walk of experience and interaction with people of all ages. You have authored over 20 books, which is absolutely amazing. And you had a book that received a lot of attention called Teaching with the Brain in Mind, and you're a longtime member of the Society for Neuroscience and the New York Academy of Sciences, and right now you are a staff developer, and you are also getting your PhD in psychology. Have you already got that, or how much longer before you get it?
I'm about at the halfway mark, and so it keeps enriching my brain every day going to staying in school.
I can believe that. I so agree with so many of the principles that you have in your material, because I believe the brain, just like the muscles in the body, has to be exercised. And exercising can be done through games, through various applications. But in this country, we are experiencing, and I've heard this from teachers, I've heard it from parents, a real problem with education. And you talk about conventional wisdom regarding intelligence, and you say that the fixed brain theory is not just dead wrong, but it's doing a lot of harm, and that the human brain is so malleable that it can be fixed at artificially low levels by giving it a constant diet of status quo. Whoa, those words are so powerful, Eric. They are so very, very powerful. You just made a comment about learning yourself and how it's keeping you in shape. Talk to us about the basic science regarding learning.
I think, first of all, that everyone's had the experience of knowing somebody who started off maybe a little slow as a learner and has stayed that way, and it sort of reinforces their, you know, their the mythology that the way you are is the way you'll stay.
Mm-hmm.
But whenever there's a story of someone, for example, who's had a head injury and makes a miraculous comeback, we sort of treat that as an anomaly. Like, wow, that was amazing. Boy, too bad that doesn't happen all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And my own journey has been that of trying to understand what in the heck we're doing right and wrong in schools. And by and large, we still, after all these years, still sort kids at school, like sort them like nuts and bolts or apples and oranges, and we put them into classes for, you know, special needs or kids who are gifted and so forth. And especially with some of the legislation that's been on for the last 5 years or so, known as No Child Left Behind, I think we've really lost our way in schools. And the point I try to make in the book is that the whole point of schools ought to be just dead on straight with parents and say, what we're going to do is we're going to enrich your child's brain and take it as far as we can go. What we know about science is this. Brains are malleable. Brains can change. That the human brain is designed to change, and human brains are designed to adapt to experiences instead of saying, oh, you're this way, well, we'll put you in this class. And that's really the shift and the change that I want. I want parents and I want all of us to be hearing, and that is that I'm not preaching that you can take any kid anywhere and turn him into an Einstein. That's not what I'm trying to say. What I'm saying is that our brains are designed to change, and if people stay the same, it's usually because their environments stay the same.
There is a movie that I saw a few months ago, and it was put out a while back, called The Freedom Writers. And I thought it was one of the best movies that had ever been put out about education. And it was about a young teacher who believed that her students were intelligent, contrary to the popular bureaucratic view, because the school was in a poor section of town. In fact, it was one of the worst sections of town. And the whole story was about, and it was a true story, that this young teacher said, I know these people are intelligent. These are young adults. They are intelligent. And they were superb. But she had to do things a little bit of differently than the established norm.
And the battles that she went through as a teacher are actually pretty common, as in, amazingly, if you ask, and this survey has been replicated, but if you ask most teachers, do you think it's appropriate to teach higher-order thinking skills to kids from poverty? Nearly half of all teachers say, no, it's not appropriate.
Now, they're taught that when they're in college, are they not?
It could be, and it could be that they have lifelong prejudices. And the reason this is really important and why the movie you brought up was really relevant is because everybody grows up with our own set of myths and our own set of ideas about what's possible and what's not. And I think what the movie was really saying is that kids from poverty, nothing usually changes for them. And so why do you expect to see miracles if nothing's going to change? And when the teacher in the movie tried to rattle the change and to really make school different, she was being chastised for it, as in to say, well, these kids can't change, when in fact the reason they didn't change is because nobody changed things.
Correct. And I have often had the stance of opinion that it's up to us as adults to be the example, and that it is the youngster that if we have the high expectations of them, they usually will step up to giving their best. But you must expect that from them. Otherwise, they just go, oh, okay.
You're right on the money with that. And a good example of why enriching the brain is such an important concept, where I live in San Diego, just 5 miles away, there's a school which only accepts kids from poverty. In fact, 100% of the kids in the school, their parents have zero college education. In other words, that's a requirement of the kids in the school too. Their parents have to have no college education, so they're all poverty, they're all on free and reduced lunch. And so what you get out of the school for kids of poverty, and there's 750 kids enrolled in the school, is you would think that these kids would sort of be like most kids in the country, and that you'd see, you know, the typical levels of not very many of them going to college. And yet, in fact, in June of this year, the graduating class of the school graduated. 96% went on to four-year universities, including Dartmouth, Stanford, UCLA, and Yale, and Georgetown University. And this is from a 100% poverty school. And the reason I bring this up is because people usually say, show me the money, show me the schools in which if you enrich the brain that it's actually going to turn out. And the fact is that there are schools all over the world that do that, and people keep trying to isolate them as if, oh, that's a freakish example, instead of saying, you know what, why isn't that the norm?
There are also, I think, many misconceptions about those that are classified as special learners. And I think many times they might have a different way of working with their mind. But if they are worked with and not looked down upon, they often will come up and surpass expectations. We have a member of our family who dropped out of high school. And this was a person that everybody considered slow. He was anything but slow. He ended up running for the U.S. government, a computer services division. He could figure out anything with computers and was asked to repair all kinds of stuff. It's just his head worked differently. and he is brilliant.
Many of the kids, like the one that you described going through school, have to be lucky enough to find somebody that's going to steer them in the right direction or at least direct them. Otherwise, you know, many of them just develop what we call secondary disorders, and those are things like, you know, terribly low self-esteem, or they become behavior problems in school. In fact, you can just run down a list, sort of like who's who for successful people, and find that so many of those were the ones in school that didn't fit, you know, if you want to call it, fit the mold in school. And I think partly we do know that there are many ways to be smart, and that's one thing that's really important to honor. And I think the focus of the book, Enriching the Brain, is on saying, regardless of where you are at in terms of intelligence, your brain is designed to respond to the environment. So the fact is, it could get worse, or fortunately, it can get a lot better. And what the book's describing are, what are some of the driving factors that really push change in the brain? If you don't know what changes the brain, you are stuck the way you are.
So many individuals in life, just as you've said, that have been considered nincompoops by others because they didn't fit whatever the mold was of the generation they came up through. When they step out and say thanks but no thanks, they often have a very rough road that they go through, but they often then have a drive that will push beyond the boundaries. And it is the creative thinking, the creative problem solving. You bring up factors about how many times the so-called street smart kids, when they do get an education, they apply it in a much more practical, realistic way, and they just take off like eagles and fly.
Yeah, you're right. One of the studies that I quote in the book, Enriching the Brain, is that if you had a choice of three different variables, and you could pick for your son or daughter, you could pick either that they could have a whole lot of talent, or they could have a really high IQ, or they could be a kid that works his rear end off. You know, which one would be most likely to guarantee success in life? And statistically, it's the person that works the hardest at it, and not the person with the highest IQ. And I think many people don't understand that. And if you had to pick between someone who has a high IQ, which, by the way, nobody would turn down. I'm not saying it's a bad thing.
No.
But if you had to choose between a high IQ and someone who had really good social skills, people skills, the evidence suggests that those with people skills are more likely to be satisfied with life and to do well in life than someone with a high IQ. And the point I make in the book, Enriching the Brain, is that you have to look at forces that are going to really drive success in our lives, as opposed to saying, gee, I'm smarter, I'm not. And there's a good reason why, out of the high school kids in the United States that check the box on the surveys called Asian, like I'm an Asian, 70% of all of those high school kids will go on to college. And that's not because all Asians have a higher IQ. It's because the culture, and I've been to China many times and worked with schools in China, the culture there is that talent is almost obscured by effort. And the prevailing attitude is work your tail off.
I can totally agree with that, and I'll share something with you. There is a major national learning center, and I was chatting with one of these people. This was about 3 or 4 years ago, and they were talking about how many young people they work with that have learning challenges in school. Maybe their reading isn't up to par for whatever reason, and or their math or what have you. So this particular center, they will work with kids one-on-one. If there's a teacher assigned, they have no more than, let's say, 3 or 4, and the parents pay for this, obviously. And they said what they noticed is that they had about 5 years prior to my speaking with this particular person who was a manager of a number of these centers, he said, 5 years prior, they started getting a number of Asian families. And he said, Mom and Dad were not necessarily college educated, but it was, just like you said, in the cultural expectation that their children are going to be able to live in this society. Many of them were immigrants. And they will take them to these centers and say, you are going to be better than us. You are going to learn how to read, write, and communicate in English and, you know, be able to do well. And he said, it is amazing. They will sacrifice everything so that that youngster is going to be able to get that education. Now, when you look at the history of America, when you look at the time when the Italians and the Irish came in, and so many of the people that came over in the 17, 1800s and early 1900s, the value of education was so high. That is exactly what parents did then. They'd say, you must go to school. You must do this. This is the land of opportunity. What do you think has gone wrong? Why is it that there's not that feeling of standard in the system itself, and why do you think we have gotten pretty sloppy about our attitudes?
It's a tough question. I don't know the answer. I think you could throw just about everything at it and you'd be right, including things like politics. At some point, politicians discovered that you could use school test scores just like you could use the stock market as a basis for running for office. And as soon as students' scores became a commodity, then they became a political event. I would say that although that's a bad idea, a bigger problem that's important, Donna, to keep in mind is that it's not that we keep score, it's that we don't keep score of the right things.
Mm-hmm.
For example, if you also kept track of things such as love of learning, or if you kept track of things like effort, or if you kept track of things such as what do you do outside of school that we could also value, then suddenly what would happen in schools is we'd notice you'd get a more rounded way of being able to evaluate students. And, for example, kids who love to learn and who showed up early and stayed late, even if they weren't the best at it, what you'd find out is that they're generally going to get really, really good at it because they put in more time.
Mm-hmm.
So part of the problem is that we don't have really fair ways to evaluate students. After all these years, you still hear people, including myself, talk about things like an IQ test when we don't have really good standardized ways to talk at school about how kids are. So I think that's part of the problem, and I think that's a whole other conversation, the politics of it. I think another thing is there are a lot of myths out there. For example, one of the myths in my book that I dispel is that, you know, you're stuck with the way your genes are. And what's real important for every one of your listeners to understand is that new discoveries in neuroscience have shown us that it's not environment versus genes. It's environments and genes and a third middle ground, and that's the one called gene expression. And what scientists have discovered is that almost anything that you do in your life that you do over the long haul, for example, if you're a talk radio host,
mm-hmm.
or, for example, if you sit on the back porch of your house in the afternoon for hours and hours a day, almost anything you do over the long haul, whether it's something that's done that's a learning adventure or whether it's something that's done that's not, will create changes in your body. Anything will do that, even something acute that's done over the short haul, something like trauma. The point I'm making is that we used to think genes only provided the blueprint for ourselves, as in eye color, skin color, things like that. What we now know is that genes do respond to the environment that we're in, and if you do anything over a long haul, you will trigger something known as gene expression. And gene expression is simply the capacity of genes to respond to the environment. And we didn't know that happened before, and the bottom line is that in some studies, they've taken kids who were identified as being below average intelligence. In one group, the mean IQ was 77, and after 8 years of putting these kids in an enriched environment, the average increase in IQ was half a standard deviation, or actually over 8 points, and the largest increase was almost 20 points higher in IQ. And these are with kids that were that were special needs kids. And the point is, you do the right thing over time, and you're going to start seeing miracles in how our brain responds.
Oh, I think there's so much to this. I think that often those that cannot communicate as effectively as we would like for them to, you know, you'll have those the student said will be Johnny on the spot right there. And everybody goes, oh, isn't that wonderful? Well, you may have someone who thinks differently that may be sort of slow-pokish, but they may come up with an entirely different perspective, an entirely different way of approaching a problem-solving situation because they have this analytical side of themselves. There are so many variables, and it's so sad that we try to stick people in boxes. There was a person that made a comment many years ago to me saying, I think the biggest mistake we ever made was segregating age brackets. In other words, taking and segregating the high school students from the junior high students from the elementary students because they recalled when they were all sort of mixed together. And he said the older students would be an example for the younger students. In fact, the older students would say, hey, you got to come up and meet the mark. And the teachers were supportive, you know, of certain things. I'm not saying it was a perfect world, but
sure.
What happened was that there was an example and there were challenges. And that's what is, I think, in many instances, missing. And we have so many kids. You make a comment in here about students who watch interesting and engaging activities that others do but are not actively participating are not likely to show an enrichment process. You can have an absolute genius sitting there and go, oh, yeah, I could do that. No, they can't. They're not out there. They're not doing it. They're not putting the pedal to the metal, you might say.
Exactly. Yeah, I think really getting students engaged in the process is a huge part of it, and that's something that many schools, they look at kids and say, why aren't the kids motivated, instead of holding up a mirror and saying, what are we doing to, you know, to slow that down? What are we doing to stop that engagement? Kids love to learn. They love to try new things. They love to explore. They love to test the boundaries. And if our kids aren't doing that, we're doing something wrong.
There are two examples that I see relative to that. And I think a good teacher loves to be creative. A good teacher likes being challenged by the uniqueness of their students because that causes them to think outside the box. And there was a professor at MIT, and I remember seeing this information years ago, and I was so intrigued with it because he thought outside the box. He was finding that his engineering students, he could test them, and they were just, you know, phenomenal. They'd get these superb scores. But when he actually was trying to teach them practical application of engineering principles, and he would tell them, I want you to know a substantial amount of the information you have here is not going to apply to everyday activities. They were like in blind man's land. So he developed a competition, and he went and gave them a whole bunch of parts, boxes of parts, all kinds of junk. And he'd give it to them, and he said, you're going to have to learn how to work together. You're going to have to learn how to do this type of thing. And we're going to have a competition. Whoever comes up with XYZ robot or whatever the assignment was. And they had to do that, and they had to really work together. And there were a lot of failures, but they won. They had a blast, and this competition is still going on. Well, there was a teacher in Bellevue, Washington, that had elementary school and junior high students, and he was a science teacher. And so he, on his own time, nobody paid him for it, he had a class after school where he did something similar to what they did at MIT with the college students. He did it with the younger students. The parents were calling the school wanting to know where their kids were. They were in his class. They didn't want to leave because they were being challenged. Wow, wouldn't that be great to have that excitement in kids where they say, hey, Mom, Dad, I'll have macaroni and cheese. You know, make it a microwave because I'm in class. I want to learn this. That's exciting.
It is. I think, you know, part of that starts with the power of just believing in the capacity of humans and the capacity of the brain to make changes. In other words, whatever you see may be what you're getting for the moment, but that's not how it has to be. And one of the things I'm always sharing with people is the power of hope. Like, it doesn't mean delusional hope. Like, as I said, I don't pretend that every kid that a teacher works with is going to, you know, turn into, you know, Oprah Winfrey or Bill Gates or Einstein. But what I say is whatever you see is just the seed of greatness, and that's not what the kid is going to be. That's just what they, all you're seeing is what they, is that seed, and it's up to you to water it and to, you know, to foster a good climate. And I think that's, that power of hope is really, really important. And I'll tell you a true story about the power of hope, and it happened here in California. In a high school class, there was a kid who was given assignment in a high school English class, and the teacher's assignment was write an essay about what you want to do after graduation. And the kid writes his essay, turns it in, and he was from a lower income area, so he wrote about owning a big horse farm and maybe eventually training thoroughbreds. And the teacher gets his essay, and the teacher gives him an F on it and hands it back to him. And the kid says, a true story, the kid says, well, why did I get an F? And the teacher says, well, it's not even remotely practical. You talk about owning this massive thoroughbred farm, you know, training thoroughbred horses, and like, that's not, I wanted you to write some practical. And the teacher said to the kid, she said, if you want to rewrite this to make it more practical, I'll let you change your grade. And the kid looks at the teacher like puzzled, and he said, ma'am, you can keep your F. I'm going to keep my dream.
That's fabulous.
And by the way, the punchline to the story was that the kid was Monty Roberts, who became later known as the Horse Whisperer, who not only wrote a best-selling book and does own a large thoroughbred ranch, but also has Fortune 500 executives come from all over the world to get executive trainings at his ranch in California, in which he made every one of his essay dreams actually come true.
I believe that when you have a child that can respond like that, you already have greatness in that child that's talking out loud. And I think that is phenomenal. What I think is sad, and I see it, so much of it demonstrated by adults doing it to other adults, and of course they're going to affect the kids that way, and that is telling them you have to give up the dream. I'm so glad Monty didn't, and I'm so glad he had the courage at that young age to stand up for what he knew to be true. Eric, your book is loaded with so much good information, and I know that you have a website that is the Jensen Learning, J-E-N-S-E-N learning.com. It is so important. You go into, you know, the ADD, the ADHD, and all of these different things. You talk about Helen Keller. I mean, she is a primary example if anybody's going to overcome obstacles. But she had to have help, and it had to come from an adult because there wasn't another kid in town that would be able to communicate. It had to come from an adult that had the understanding. And I have such an empathy for those teachers out there, because I've known a number of them that have said, I love to teach, but I just cannot handle the system anymore. So they get outside of the system so that they can teach the way that they want to teach. I know of a woman who won so many teaching awards, they stopped giving the award because she was getting them all. And they said to her, well, what are you going to do? She ended up going to a prison to teach, to a prison. And what she saw there was incredible, with these juvenile delinquents that people wanted to throw away. And she said, one of the things that was the advantage, she didn't have a discipline problem.
Yes.
But the thing was, she had to grab their attention. And those that were illiterate were the ones that were having the greatest difficulties. They were the ones that were not able to cope in society because they were embarrassed. They were angry because they couldn't communicate. By the time she finished with him, she was getting letters of thank you from these young adults.
I think the big message that I want people to have is that brains are designed to change. They're designed to adapt from experience. And all you need to know is to know what are the rules, what are the factors that drive that change, and then you have to have the will to do it. You really have to have that hope and that belief and say, you know what, I do want to change.
And it's so much. There's so much in a kid. You've got the emotions. You've got the learning, the expansion. And I think one of the greatest gifts you can ever give a kid is they love to learn. I don't care if you want to become the best mechanic, whatever it is you want to do. Love what you do. But those kids have to be exposed to it. You can't keep them in a little bottle. You can't just say, this is the way it is. They need to be able to explore. They need to be able to get out there and interact with people of all ages. I just think there is so much that goes on with kids. It's absolutely wonderful. And I think your book, Enriching the Brain, is something that would benefit anybody that would read it. because if they're feeling down and out, like they don't have choices in life, I think your book is an inspiration. Eric, your website again is jensenlearning.com. We're out of time. I want to thank you for being my guest today.
You're most welcome. I appreciate it, and I just wish everyone to keep enriching their brain.
That we will encourage. My guest again, Eric Jensen, his book, Enriching the Brain, How to Maximize Every Learner's Potential. We're taking a break. We're going to be back right after this. Don't go away.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website. Go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Our telephone lines are now open. I want to give out that information so you'll have it handy. I know we've got a caller waiting, but let me give you up these details. 877-876-5227 for those of you in the U.S. 877-876-5227. Canadians, 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Or you can call the direct number of 530-876-3222. And before I go to the caller, I want to let those of you in Washington and the rest of the country know, if you happen to want to fly into the state of Washington, a marvelous event. It's coming up. The first weekend is this coming weekend. It's the Washington Renaissance Fantasy Fair, and I'm going to be participating in it. It is just a delight to work in this event because it is magical. I get to get all dressed up in fancy costumes and play queen for a day. It's absolutely marvelous. But what's even more exciting are all of the variables that will be occurring after you walk through the castle gates. You are going to step back in time into the Renaissance, and it is 3 straight weekends of total family fun. You can come in costume if you want. We have people that come in from all over the country with their own special costumes that they love to wear to this annual event. Again, I've been involved in it for years, and it's just terrific. Now, you can find out about everything about the Renaissance Fantasy Fair by going to the Washington Renaissance Fantasy Fair website. Just add a .com or just type in Washington Renaissance Fantasy Fair, and it'll pop all the information up. The hours for the next 3 weekends will be from 10 in the morning until 6 in the evening. It's at the Mentor Creek Ranch at 10215 State Road 302 in Gig Harbor, Washington. And I will have a booth on Main Street. Look for the bright golden yellow banners with the gigantic red lions on them, and that's where you're going to find me, and I'll be doing many consultations there, and I'll also have some materials that will be published by me and some other people. So we'd love to see you out there. Let's go to our first caller for the day. First name or initial, where are you calling from?
Fran from Riverside, California.
Hi, Fran. I know the sun's shining in Riverside.
Very sunny.
Yes, I'd be surprised if it wasn't, especially this time of the year. Fran, I'm watching you with interest because you've got some challenges in front of you that are going to demand your attention. And the reason these challenges are going to demand your attention is that you have actually been wanting them to evolve because you're in a patterning where you're saying, I want to get rid of certain things in my environment and I want to do it now, not later. I want it done now. So it's as if the universe has responded and said, okay, I'll give you a little bit of this. And hey, well, what about this loaded bucket over here? And we got something over there. And you're saying, whoa, this is happening too quickly. Well, know that you can handle the speed of what needs to be dealt with, and you can do it very effectively. This is so important. This is going to make such a difference for you as an individual. It's going to enable you to move forward in the latter part of fall with the speed of change that you're aspiring for. Now, I'm pleased for you. I don't know that you're going to be jumping up and down with excited yahoo. I don't know that that's going to be your feeling. You may sometimes think, I really think I need to get in touch with the customer service department of the universe because I don't like the way they're handling my orders. However, it is happening fast for a reason, so that you can get things the way you want them prior to the end of the year, because 2008 is coming up and you have got a big workload here. And you're really going to be pushing hard because you want to make change thoroughly and efficiently, and you want to move forward. And I like what I see here. But again, it's going to involve a great deal of work. You're really pushing your boundaries, and there's nothing wrong with that. You just need to pay attention and take one day at a time. What would you like to ask me today?
I had an interview yesterday with a gentleman, and the interview lasted 2 hours. Do you see that interview being productive?
What kind of a job are you interviewing for?
Well, it wasn't for a job. It was more information gathering, and we're working on a project together. And he came to gather information and. The idea is we have a project, and he's basically being more of the one at the helm of the ship on the project. He needed the information from me, and I contributed, and I told him I would be available for any more contribution if he found it necessary. And I just wondered if you picked up that it was going to end. Successfully.
Well, are you wanting a contract with him? Is that what you're asking me?
Well, it's no, it wouldn't be a contract. It ends in a way where it can go either way. It can go successfully, or it could go where it just is not at all successful.
Well, I don't think it's an either or. I really don't. I think there's a lot more going on here.
Okay.
And I know we're on air and you're not at liberty to disclose certain things, and that's fine. I respect that. But what I would say to you is there's a follow-up that needs to be done here. And that is something that I would give a little bit of time to allow him to go through and to digest what you've given. I don't think you covered everything. I do think he will have some additional questions.
Okay.
There's got to be something here where there is going to be an ongoing association. So if you can take a positioning of not making it an either or,
okay.
But you are developing a relationship, an association with this person, and that association is going to be one of trust, and clarity. And that is what you want to reinforce. He may not be able to move on what you have proposed because of some changing variables in his environment.
Okay.
On other aspects, he might be able to do something. So I can't give you a black or white here.
Okay.
Because it's not black or white. It's got too many levels to it.
You're
so
right.
The key is to be able to demonstrate to him your sincerity, your clarity, your willingness to follow up with him to be sure that everything is understood. And if he has questions, you, again, just reinforce. If you have questions, know you can call me.
Okay.
And if there's anything that comes to your mind right at this moment when I'm talking to you, ask me.
Okay. Right.
But there is going to be that follow-up, Fran.
Okay, wonderful. I thank you so much.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Okay.
You have a good day now.
And you as well. Thank you.
You're welcome, Fran. This is Donna Sebo, and if you'd like to call in and chat with me today, like Fran, here are the telephone numbers that you call in to. Toll-free for the U.S. is 877-876-5227. For Canadians, it's 888-815-9756. We also have a direct line of 530-876-3222. Well, what food is it that is absolutely just about everybody's favorite, and it can be eaten just about any time of the year? During the summer, it is especially good. What comes into your mind when I say that? Well, I'm going to let you sort of dwell on it a little bit, because I am going to share with you some information about my upcoming guest, and then I'll come back with you and tell you what it is that I'm talking about. Now, tomorrow we're going to be talking with Dr. Mitchell Gibson. His book is called Your Immortal Body of Light. Now, this is a book that is relevant to his own personal experience, and it totally transformed his life. Also, we're going to be talking on Thursday with Dr. Lynn Eldridge, how to avoid cancer one day at a time. This doctor has done quite a bit of research, has some very interesting perspectives that she's going to be sharing, so we'll be hear those. And then we're going to be talking with Grant Langdon, and this is a provocative topic. It's called Scandal in the Courtroom. So we will be with us on Friday. And then we've got so many people coming up for this month, and I'll be putting all of that information on the BBS website. That should be on by tomorrow. So you'll have a complete listing of the upcoming guests. And if you have a comment or a suggestion, then just go ahead and touch that comment button on our website and then let us know what you think, what you're interested in, and we'd love to hear from you. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you want to chat. I'd be glad to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight at 877-876-5227. And for those of you in Canada, 888-815-9756. And for everyone else, the telephone direct line is 530-876-3222. Now, by the way, I am going to be going into San Francisco. I have an appearance in San Francisco. I'll be passing along more information about. That's going to be in the middle of September, 14th and 15th. So in the coming weeks, we'll be giving you information about that. Also, I will be on my way up to Alaska probably during the month of October. So for those of you living in the most parts of the country, just know that I will be available. All right, what I was talking about in the way of a food, well, again, you're going to have to wait just a little bit longer. What is a food that can be eaten all year round, but during the summer, oh my goodness, it is ever so popular. Well, you're going to find out what it is when I come back from break. This is Donna Sebo, and don't forget, you can talk with me at 877-876-5227 or 888 for those of you in Canada, 815-9756. Don't go away. This is Donna Sebo. We'll be back in just a moment.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Enter the magical world of God's kiss.
He sees a large open area of valley ground covered with a thick green grass. In the open space are many other children and animals. All kinds of animals. And all of the animals are talking. He can understand every word they are saying.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life, ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss, book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling. And the author, Donna Sebo, will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Okay, I was posing a question to you about a food that is the favorite, absolute favorite of millions, can be eaten all year round. But summertime, it is especially popular. What is that food? It is ice cream. Yes. July is National Ice Cream Month, and there's over 1 billion gallons of ice cream sold annually in the U.S. alone. So July was designated as National Ice Cream Month. Why? Well, my goodness, in many parts of the country, it's one of the hottest months of the year. 80% of all the milk produced in the U.S. ends up as this delicious frozen treat in a lot of different flavors. Now, it's been a food that's been popular since the 1700s, but it wasn't until 1984 that there was a proclamation designated July as a National Ice Cream Month. Well, there are so many wonderful stories about ice cream, and I had the pleasure of interviewing Michael Turbach, who is absolutely a connoisseur when it comes to ice cream, and he put together this delightful book, A Month of Sundays, and believe me, you go through 2 pages and you're salivating because of all of the wonderful recipes, etc. But he gives a lot of history, and in 1939, the World's Fair in New York City optimistically previewed modernism that would mark the second half of the 20th century. Now, dairy stands in 1939 sold dishes of ice cream for 40 cents. Can you believe that? 40 cents. And ice cream sundaes were a whopping 50 cents. 50 cents. Tourist prices, in 1940, well, guess here are some numbers. This will really tickle you. A Ford coupe cost only $600. And prices for ice cream sundaes and other such things, including automobiles, are substantially different. Well, that's because we just live in a different time zone. And there were a lot of changes. So I've got some wonderful stuff about a store called Woolworths. Do any of you recall that? Well, it was a chain, and there's a fun story regarding ice cream and Woolworths that I'll share with you. This is Donna Sebo. We have a caller on the line, first name or initial, and where are you calling from?
Hi, name is Scott, and I'm calling from Los Angeles.
Hi, Scott. Welcome to the show. What I'm looking at with you is the discouragement that you have been feeling relative to some particular circumstances that are totally out of your control. You need to realize that you're going to be able to step away from that discouragement. And I'm getting the number 2, 3, and 6. So I don't know if it's the 2nd, 3rd, and 6th day from now, or it's the 2nd, 3rd, and 6th week. Now, the reason I'm given the 3 numbers is that apparently you're going to have what I would describe as a release from concern, let's say in the 2nd week. This isn't too far off, or 2nd day from now. It's either the 2nd day or the 2nd week. And then you think you've got everything in order and something goes awry, and then it's like the third week, the third day or the third week, and then everything seems to be okay, and then it's like the sixth week after the fact, there is some kind of a whiplash, I'll use that description, and you go, oh, gee whiz, I thought I had it all resolved, and guess what? It's not. So these are just a patterning or patternings of what's evolving around you, and so you don't want to stay stuck. If you find that your mind is dwelling on what you know is a self-sabotaging thought patterning, go take a walk, pull weeds, talk to the dog, do something that physiologically is going to put you into a different mode, and that is going to enable you to make the switch, so that you'll get the emotional upheaval under control, and you'll be able to calm the mental anxiousness and the mental spinning that you would go through. That, my goodness, it's, all of us have done it at one time or another, and it's just so depleting because we can't think straight. So you've got a lot on your plate right now, and you need to pay attention to what you can control and be alert and aware about that you cannot. Because what you do with what you can control will make the difference. What question would you like to ask me today, Scott?
I'm sorry?
What question would you like to ask me?
Oh, that's basically what I was asking about, because I'm working on basically too many things right now. And I do feel that discouragement, so I wanted to know what to do about it. So,
well, that's very interesting.
Yeah.
Well, I hope that I answered that for you.
Yes, I think so.
Good.
Thank you.
Well, you're more than welcome, Scott. You
Thank
have
you.
A fabulous day. This is Donna Sebo. And don't forget, for those of you in Washington, yes, the first weekend of the Washington Renaissance Fantasy Fair, it is coming up this coming Saturday and Sunday, and then there's two weekends after that. And it is a wonderful event. If you have never seen a knight in his equestrian jousting activity, boy, you're going to see it there. You're going to see kids whose eyes will get as big as saucers because they have a chance to participate in all kinds of games. You're going to have stage plays that will be going on, musical performances, wandering minstrels and magicians, face painting, and you know what? If you do not have a costume, you can rent one. You can really get into the mood of the Renaissance and have the time of your life. People come in from all over the country. There's going to be Highland dancers, bagpipers, my goodness, and vendors of all kinds. They have so many different wares that they are going to be selling. And some of them, they're even going to show you how they make it. So you'll step back in time, have a break from the modern day spin and turmoil that so many of us experience, and just relax, have a good time. Good food, good entertainment. You can't go wrong. It's a family event. Bring the kids. You can even bring the dog. I mean, whatever you want to do, it is just absolutely marvelous. It is the first three weekends in August. Again, number one weekend coming up this weekend, hours 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. It's at the Mentor Creek Ranch at 10215 State Road 302 in Gig Harbor. And remember, look for my booth. I'm on the main street. When you come in through the castle gates, you walk Main Street, which is on your right side, and you'll see me towards the end, and my booth has gigantic yellow banners with huge red lions on them. So you'll know where I am, and come by and say hello. I just absolutely enjoy meeting members of my audience, and so you can just have a great time, but come by and say hello. I will be doing many consultations for people while I am there. Okay, and phone number to call into if you'd like to chat with me, 877-876-5227 or 888-815-9756. And that's for Canadians. Woolworth is a store. They still have a few Woolworths in the country, but at one time, this was a huge, huge chain of stores, and they had a hot fudge sundae. The people just absolutely stood in line for. Now, after the 1929 market crash, there weren't a lot of things that the average person could afford, and ice cream really was one of those pleasures that just was so much looked forward to by so many people. Now, this gave the Dime Sunday a real new status because of that difficult period in U.S. history. It became a treat for special occasions, and at the same time, it possibly became a more frequent indulgence for those who still had a bit of jingle in their pockets. So that is what the Sunday might have, what it has done about making things a little bit more equal. Now, Sunday vendors, ingenious as ever, modeled new varieties of Sundays on the happier news of the Depression era. They said, it's hard to understand how a good news event such as the birth and survival of five identical girls, the Dionne Quintuplets in Ontario, Canada, so completely captured American hearts. And the birth at that time seemed like a miracle because it was very much ahead of our very technically sophisticated care for premature babies and multiple births. And they were really in the news at this time that Woolworths was really coming up and going. And Sundays, well, they became very much a part of movies environments. And also, there's just so many different things that happened. And ice cream was often at the center of a lot of activities. Now, Woolworth, Frank Woolworth, opened his first store in 1879 in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. The people of Lancaster were known to be especially thrifty. By 1913, he had 1,000 stores nationwide, and the company was headquartered in what was then the world's tallest building, the Woolworth Building in Manhattan. Now, Woolworth, during the Depression, did very, very well, absolutely wonderfully. And in the 1930s, business people would go to Woolworth's for lunch because they didn't want to brown bag their lunch, and by golly, they were just packed. That was a very significant part of the store environment. Now, there was one big extravagance, and that was the ice cream. And what they did, they created a 4-scoop Jim Dandy banana split. And they had that at Woolworth's, and people would order that all the time. Now, in 1979, the brothers that owned Woolworth sold their chain to Hershey, and today the friendly split has retreated to the basic ice cream flavor trio, vanilla, chocolate, and strawberry. And, of course, it's called today the Royal Banana Split. Now, if you want, here are some things that you can do with ice cream that really is a lot of fun. Imagination is great when it comes to serving ice cream. Well, you know what? I think I'm going to have to tell you about that another time because we are out of time. This is Donna Sebo. We'll be back tomorrow, and same time, same place. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You're the captain of your soul. God bless. Have a fabulous day. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send